on here, this page, where the proteins and those things are numbered, can I assume that the order that they're in is the order of preference of their value? Because the protein number one, like for breakfast, is almonds. And I knew that you had said that almonds were number one. And then the reason that I really started to wonder about that was because for lunch, protein number 13, the last one is pork. Does that mean that we should sort of follow these by preference?
Well, yeah, since there's a preference in the protein because you have the choice between tissue and fiber. But your body is not designed to digest tissue. Is designed to digest fiber, but it will encapsulate tissue by decomposition. So what it does is this is a fiber object. And let's say these are some minerals that are in the fiber object. Naturally, it separates the fiber by the hydrochloric acid, causing it to dilate out. So the fibers open up and these minerals drop out. And they move on and is absorbed by the tissues for transportation. So actually, you don't really eat. No human being actually eats. They process elements to move on time within a given area in order to maintain transportation flow known as circulation. But the process of the movement sets up a constriction dilation which you feel is a sensation called energy. These are conditions that are going on inside of us, which we're not aware of until we have microscopes to check it out, but that's exactly what is going on. Now, this dilation process leaves the residue called fiber to go in and scour deposits left in the colon previously by a previous meal and move it on out. So you get an ideal bowel movement. Normally, if it doesn't go in there, it'll just sit there and doesn't pass out. Now, when you eat meat, if your stomach was designed to eat meat, it would automatically destroy and utilize its own flesh. So hydrochloric acid cannot break down tissue, otherwise it'll do it to its own self. So the hydrochloric acid compresses. Everything starts to close in. So it tends to compress it. That's what we call constricted. So it shoots the element out like a bullet. So it flies out to go, and so you feel a quick surge that you get in your body from a piece of meat. That's the element shooting through fast. But at the same time, you have the residue that meat can't digest. It'll have to decompose. So it'll have to go through a rotting process where particular condition can occur, what we call bacterial growth. That's what we call worm or parasitical condition. But because it's being compressed, it's a mush. And the minerals are shot out like a bullet. You have two substances in there that tends to insulate you. And that's the a uric acid from the tissue itself that can be taken out when the meat is killed. And then there's an adrenaline. And the animal was in pain before it died. These are in the tissue of the meat. No matter how you cook it, you don't get rid of it. All you do is slow down the action. But when they go into the intestines, now they're shooting out. And so the adrenaline overloads the adrenals, and the uric salts overload the urine. But you have a problem. You have no fiber, it's tissue, so it doesn't move. So if you don't eat any salad or any kind of a vegetable with fiber, it'll sit there in the colon. And that's why, in preference of the structure, the food is set up to maintain proper movement. So the tissue is a secondary backup food. It's not a primary food. Your body primarily is designed to utilize fiber. But because of the temperature changes over the centuries, man could not originally eat fiber all the time. And if he ate fiber all the time, he died. Just as much as he ate meat all the time or tissue, he died. Nature doesn't have any extremes. As I said yesterday, 80% of the time, you're alkaline and 20% then you're acid. If you try to be 100% acid or 100% alkaline, you get the same disease. It's called cancer. So there's no way you can be extreme. Nature doesn't permit it. And she provides every precaution and every backup system to correct it. But she allows you individuality through your personality, the freedom to make your mistake with your mouth and correct it with your mouth. But between the two periods of sickness to the periods of health, she leaves you with the pain. So between health and sickness, you have a sensation that you may not want to appreciate. It's called pain, but it's the best way nature knows how to do it. So when you look at pain, you spell it P-A-I-N, you're in your father as a sperm. And he throws you out, he didn't ask your consent, and that's the best, big pain you ever had in your life. And it's stored in your memory bank as a cell that you were thrown out without your consent, so you were rejected. So whenever you come out in this world and you feel rejected, don't blame nobody. You're already rejected by the father throwing the sperm out. But you can't ask your consent either, because why? If you did, you wouldn't go. So that's why you have to throw you, they're drafted. So that's the first pain. Then the next pain is the sensation of being separated. Because you got to be in the ovum, you don't know if your mother going to keep you or you're going to throw in the garbage bin. So you got to wait for 9 months to see if she keep you. And then when they cut the cord, she throw you out now. You're going to live your own life. If you breathe, they keep you. If you don't breathe, you throw you back in the garbage bin. So that's real pain, P-A-I-N. Then as you grow up after 18 years of age, they are responsible. Before you're born, those two people are called mom and pop. After you're born, they're called parent. They pay the rent. And they got to pay for 18 years by law. Now they're saying 21, because they're trying to impose a little more. But for 18 years, they pay the rent. And at the end of 18 years, you throw you out again, standing on 2 feet. And there you go, pain, P-A-Y-I-N-G. Pay for everything you want. So it's the best way I ever learned, and I don't know any way better. Could be worse. Never had a chance to try. You know, if your daddy and mommy never had a chance to throw you out to try, where would you be?
Where would we be?
You wouldn't be, that's the first thing.
You wouldn't be,
you see. Now, the great poet says, to be or not to be is the question. And then he poses the question, which is noble to do? Lay down your life for the not a jerk, or go muck it up? Not to be is a good way to be. A mock-up jerk.
A mock-up jerk.
Well, it's fun, after all.
Another question.
Yeah.
On this page, this corner,
is,
it says anytime.
That's right. But it's used for therapy.
Okay.
And
because it said ice cream, anytime.
Yeah, I know. It says that, but that is in reference to therapy.
Okay.
You see, we don't like to impose laxatives. But you should eat 6 days and rest 7 days and clean up your body by nature laws. But then a laxative is a means of relaxing the body. So nature has set up what is called a monotrophic process. That's a single food, 3 times a day, and the body accepts that as a laxative process after the first day. So if you repeat it the second day, the body knows you're doing a laxative process. And then the third day, which completes the polarity, you empty the whole body and put it back in normal state. So you can take any food and eat it 3 times a day for 3 days. It'll act as a complete laxative. We just list a few there, which normally are ideal for doing the work. But around lunar time, which is the full moon time, it's very practical, because you're utilizing the pressure of the moon to speed up the process of moving substances out of your body that are in the colon. Now, ice cream is not bad. Good old-fashioned ice cream is healthy for two reasons. Cream does not have lactic acid.
Okay.
Milk has lactic acid. Ice cream is made from the cream, and then they whip it up, and then they heat, cool it down. And then they can add either honey or whatever they want to flavor. But a frozen cream is not bad for the health. Because it's the very same cream you make butter with. You don't make butter from milk.
Right.
So, therefore, it's ideal for the body. The problem that we have with the dairy products is not the ice cream, it's the stuff they put in it.
Like chocolate and all that stuff.
And it's in the milk where the lactic acid is. So that's where the problem is, you see. But normally, if you drank goat milk is alkaline, and human milk is alkaline. So there's no problem with it. That's why the people who live in the Hunza land, or those who live very long lives, drink goat milk. They don't drink cow milk. Most people think that the yogurt that the people were eating that kept them alive and healthy was made from cow. There aren't no cows in those parts of the world to produce the milk. It's mostly goats. And when the fellow went to Hunza, the doctor who first encountered yogurt, he never clarified when he came back that the yogurt was made from goat milk. It's until they start experimenting it to sell it to the public between goat milk and cow milk, then they found out there was a big problem, that people taking yogurt from cow milk were getting sick versus yogurt made from goat milk.
Oh, interesting. I noticed on this list for lunch, milk's not included, but yogurt is.
Yeah, because it's a fermented process and the lactic acid is out. So it's good for your digestion, but you don't need too much of it.
Okay.
If you're eating properly and you're eliminating properly, you very seldom need a yogurt. But if you have a problem in digestion and elimination, then the yogurt is a help. Now, you went away yesterday and didn't get all the facts about what you have a few things I wanted to know about in class one, and that is you were told what foods to cook.
Right? Mm-hmm.
That they have to be cooked, they cannot be eaten raw.
Correct.
All right. And also, if ever you're going to cook a vegetable, you cut it in the middle down and then you cut it at an angle. Don't cut it straight.
Okay.
The angle is to prevent it from leaching out the minerals too fast from the heat. And you were told to dextranize your food. Okay. There. Then we covered the clock.
We did.
Very
yes.
Good. Mm-hmm. And we you left around the time of the heart, right?
I left when you were talking about combinations. No, it was the last thing I wrote down was don't eat dried fruits.
Right, don't eat dried fruits. Pre-soak them.
Right, and before that, we did, immediately before that, we checked the breathing at 3 a.m.
Right, and to increase or decrease, you know what to do. Okay. Now, did you get the liver flush?
No.
All right. To flush the liver, and this you do before you go to bed at night, 1 tablespoon of olive oil, 1/2 of a lemon, 1 clove of garlic, and 1 sprig of parsley, and you crush it all up and you drink it before you go to bed. That's to flush out the liver. And you do it for 7 days. Every evening before you go to bed.
Would you still be eating?
Well, you eat regularly, yeah, eat regularly. This is to clean the liver.
What kind of effect would that have? I mean, what can you expect to happen?
Then you clean the liver. Well, diseases of the liver are fall on the 3 categories. You have fungated liver, which Orientals suffer from eating raw marine life or raw tissue. Or you have hardening of the liver or cirrhosis of the liver, which Caucasians suffer from drinking too much heavy alcohol. And slowing down or speeding up of the liver, which becomes jaundiced. And that is due to too much carbon dioxide and fried foods. So people who load up on French fries and all the different deep freeze fried foods and soda pop and beer, they get the problem with the jaundice. But then you can correct, clean it out.
How frequently do you do a liver flush then?
Yeah.
How frequently, how often?
Well, according to your clock, what season of the year is it? It's in the winter season of the year. So when do you eat your most meat?
Winter time.
It's when you're cold, right? And you eat the least meat when you're hot. So therefore, if you want to have the body function for you, then you do the cleaning up of your liver in the winter. In the winter. But, and towards spring.
Donna, what would be determined? I remember you saying that certain signs are more heated up than, say, cooled down. What would determine if your system's, say, colder than it is warmer? What would cause that?
Tension.
So it should be a neutral balance, basically, if you're healthy?
You can be extremes. So that's why you have blood types. Your blood type indicate that if you're a plus or a minus, which only indicates you're going too fast or too slow in your absorption rate. It's called a metabolic weight. It doesn't say you're a good guy or a bad guy. So if you're a type A plus, it means you're a type A fast metabolizer. If you're a type A minus, you're a slow metabolizer. That doesn't say you're bad or good. It doesn't say you're healthy or sick. This is how your mechanism works. In other words, you're an automatic or a stick shift.
So would you slow the one down and speed the other up?
That's right.
And that would be by the, how would you do that? I mean, it's the eating, obviously, but...
No, you can't change your blood type, so don't fool yourself around. You don't change your blood type. If you're a slow metabolizer,
That means you take your time to eat, and therefore you should make sure that certain foods are in the body for the absorption and not in the wrong time. So if you're a slow metabolizer and you put in carbohydrate before you put in protein, you're going to have a problem. So your first food as a slow metabolizer should always be protein. This is your advantage. Now, a fast metabolizer needs the protein also, but he doesn't have to put in as much to start. He can put in a little to trigger it like a hot rod machine, but then intersperse more of the carbohydrate and then temper it off towards spreading it out through the entire meal. But that's a fast metabolizer. So you intersperse the protein with the carbohydrate to keep it moving. Whereas a slow metabolizer should have more protein first to get it going, and then the carbohydrates will back up the meal.
Is it karma or something that determines what blood type you'll be? And other
no,
specific
appearance.
Lessons
no,
that
your
go
no, your parents.
Well, that would, so it's just chance of heredity?
Mm. Well, your parents determines that particular condition.
Mm-hmm.
If your daddy is an A plus and mom is an O minus,
you're going to be an A plus.
So you'd come out A plus. O is a donor. See, chances are you're going to take the A. Now, if your daddy is an A and the mom is an A plus, you can come out A plus. But then you're always going to sneak out to go drink alcohol and eat meat. Because you want to, what, overindulge. In the basic, the percentage of alcoholics are the A type. Because they're always sneaking out to do the opposite of what they're designed for. They're designed to be fiber eaters, and they're designed to be nice, holy gandawa. But they want to sneak out to be the rough guy. And the O type, they're designed to be the rough guy, but they always sneak out to do the what?
I have to be
the O holy gandawa guy.
Oh, that is so funny.
So that's basically me. I say, yeah, I'm a type O, and I want to be a holy gandawa, and end up with cancer.
Mm.
Then I had a friend who was a type A. All he's doing is sneaking out and munching on all kind of crazy things. So we find out that this particular phenomena is in all the blood types. And the most difficult one is the AB type. Those are the keen.
The what?
Your blood type is a story that has to do with your Garden of Eden. A is Adam. A good, nice, vegetarian boy. I have no problem with it. And B is Eve, a nice, good, meat-eating girl. And together they had a little kid by the name of Cain, who wanted to raise a lot of Cain. And so he's an AB. And that blood type is always fanatical and very suicidal and very self-destructive. But they're very, very focused on never to do the wrong thing, even if they're wrong. So they are fanatical in that sense, in eating. So they say the story goes, he offered up to God his vegetarian food because he was a vegetarian. And he was conceived in the garden. See, vegetarian. And then when his brother was conceived outside of the garden, he was the animal type, that's a type O, that's able, if he's able to do it. And so he offered up a little goat or a sheep. And then they said the God accepted the goat over the vegetable. So the brother got angry, that's how the story goes. But really, the type O blood is your blood donor. Universal blood donor to all the other two blood types. And the AB is the rare blood type. That's why they say when the punishment came for Cain after killing his brother, they said, let no man lay a hand upon him, vengeance is mine, said the Lord. And then Cain cried out, that was a hell of a punishment. It means he'll hang around here for midnight eternity and nobody can do anything. So that was a kind of a conclusion it came to, but actually the type AB is the rare blood type, and they tend to hemorrhage a lot, and then it's hard for them to get the blood to work on them. They have to get AB blood. Type O wouldn't work. It's funny, the type O wouldn't work. So AB has to have AB, but A can have O, or A can have A, and B can have O, or B can have B, and O don't need no more but O.
O can only have O?
No, they can have
O anyway.
But they don't need anything more than O anyhow, because the majority of blood that they take in the hospital or storage, the blood bank is, if you're O type, they like to keep O type because that's universal. But they can't use that in an AB. You have to have AB for AB.
Does type O predominate statistically?
Well, the iron transportation is different in the type O. That's why it's a universal donor. The iron is in the blood. Life is in the blood. So what is life in the blood? The iron element. If you don't have iron in your blood, they call you what?
Anemic. Anemic.
Oh, anemic. And so, which person suffers the most, a woman or a man?
Women.
Why?
Because they don't have iron in their blood.
No, she's losing it every 20
every month.
Years. So therefore, it's a very disastrous function to her mechanism, and it drains the iron. So they decided to make a little product which they want the woman to take every 28 days after her period is called Geritol.
And does it really help?
Have you ever heard of Geritol?
Mm.
What does it do?
Puts iron back in the
body. Good. Wow. So, but that iron, though it goes into the body and helps the woman, is not ideal because, why? Iron is taken into the body in 3 times a day from 3 different light sources. And Geritol only comes from one source. It comes from coal tar.
From where?
They extract it from a coal tar base. And make tablets with it.
So where would the woman put the iron back in? What would she take
If she takes her almonds in the morning, she has what?
Bone dry in the morning and molasses in the afternoon.
Oh,
there's iron in the almonds.
That's what they take class 2 for, you see.
Oh.
To find out what elements are in the food.
Oh.
Do you ever took class 2 yet? Good. That's where you're going to find out now where you find the elements. Is everybody here yet, or there's 2 more? Okay, let's get started. Your biological clock is set, and the organs we know from 3 a.m. to 5 a.m. is the lungs. And from 5 to 7 is the large intestine. And 7 to 9 is the stomach. As we mentioned in class 1, every organ has a 2-hour shift. There's an ascending function and a descending function in the organ. So the first hour is ascending, and the second hour is descending. And this particular rhythm goes on in your body. So therefore, if they're going to take a blood test of the person, they do it every 4 hours to get a reading between organs. So if they test your blood now, they wouldn't test it before in the next 4 hours. They have to have 2 organs functioning at the polarity process before they'll get a reading of what the blood is doing. And that's in terms of the transportation of minerals.
is known as circulation. So from 9 to...
Adam,
yeah?
Did they know that at different times the different organs... I mean, you're talking
chronobiology, about... They did. Chronobiology is the latest money spent now by the government all over in the United States of America and in Europe to tracking down what is going on in the body. So they've already done a lot of work to cover that. And the first breakthrough began in cancer back in 1981. Dr. Horesky, a friend of mine, he did some work on cancer where he developed an injection known as platinum chloride for uterine cancer. And he administered it, and all the illnesses disappeared out of the rats that he experimented on. Then he allowed it to be used on human beings. Some got well and some didn't get well, and they couldn't understand why. And when he went back to observe the records, those that got well were given the injection before midday. Those that died got the injection after midday, but they didn't die from uterine cancer. They didn't die from the injection. They all died from pneumonia around 5-6 o'clock in the morning. And that was the symptom condition of the platinum chloride administered after midday. So he went back to his lab and he took his own set of rats again and applied it before midday and after midday. All the rats lived before midday, and all the ones after midday died, and the symptom was still pneumonia, clogging up of the lungs. Therefore, he went and notified all the programs to not to administer the drug after midday. And then they had their first World Congress in 1984 in Florida, where they put out the facts and indicated that they were not going to do any time implication, and to study the time very critical regarding the administration of the chemistry to the type of disease they had. And that began the first sponsoring of money for researchers all over to look at what illnesses and what drugs were being used to correct it, and what were the side effects in terms of time before and after midday, before and after midday. And so a lot of researchers are going on that now. So a doctor who may give you a medicine will tell you, take this 3 times a day and call me if you have any unusual symptom. So if you drink the medicine in the morning and you got a headache, you call the doctor. Say, doc, I drank the medicine this morning, I got a headache. Okay, don't take it in the morning. Tell me what happens after lunch. So you drink it after lunch and you don't get a headache. And then you take it at nighttime and you got another headache. It says, okay, now don't take it in the morning, don't take it at night. Take it only in the middle of the day. So that's how he gets his record. There's no when to tell you, then he doesn't. But that's how he's working now, to make sure that he has the right time to indicate when to take the medicine. But that's going on now.
But chronobiology is... Sounds
that's
like it's
the new name for it.
It's in its infant stages.
I know.
It's... there... What... it doesn't have to do with where all the timing is that we're talking about in terms of food and organs. It's not that... you might say advanced or
they
comprehensive.
They are doing the research, but they're cataloging all their results to see if they're coming out with the same observations.
Okay.
And so far, between Germany and the States and France, they read a biological clock within 2 rhythms, from 12 midnight to 12 midday, and 12 midday to 12 midnight.
Mm-hmm.
And all the illnesses that operate or occur with their symptoms from 12 midnight to 12 midday.
and all the symptoms and occurrences from 12 midday to 12 midnight. And they're cataloging that right now in that process. So you will read that the doctors will say the time control of the body begins at 12 midnight in the biological clock. That's not incorrect. That's just as valid, but that's in the living. Now, between 3 and 5 is your lungs. In actual functioning of your body, the lungs take priority over the liver. You can get the best liver in the world and you don't breathe in Ontario. So that will tell you why the biological clock is read two ways. It's read at the liver time by the researchers. For the solar nutritionist, it's read by the lungs. If I don't breathe, I can get the best parts of my body, they'll still bury me. I can be the wisest guy, the richest guy in the world, and I don't breathe, they bury me. I'd rather be a dumb calf than alive with breathing. So you see, breath takes priority over all the organs.
Well, Donald, if they had your information, say it was published, is it the same story again of everybody has to do their thing in their timing? I mean, it would help the whole...
we have a problem in this society. We're busy trying to change others. We don't want to change ourselves first. And that's not our purpose of soul nutrition. Our purpose of soul nutrition is to get you to clean up your act. And then when people have a need, then they'll ask you. In the meantime, you impose your ideas. It sounds crazy. I know a lot of people who come to take my classes, and those who come around the clinic that don't take the classes, and they hear their friends bring them, and they will try it off and leave it off. And one man not too long ago, I hadn't seen him for 7 years, and I remember the first time he came. Solar nutrition was just another lunatic game. Then he came back about a month ago, and the comment was, I've tried everything in the book to prove you wrong, but I still say that you must have got the best idea going because it works. That was the only comment he could have. I said, well, if it works, I would be here. If it didn't work, they'd bury me too. So, for that matter, there must be something working in soul nutrition. But here's the other real truth of it. People who have done soul nutrition and had to have blood tests for where they work, the doctors are puzzled with the low cholesterol count. They eat food that is not contributive to good cholesterol control. And yet, when they take a cholesterol reading, they don't have a high cholesterol count. And that's what puzzles everybody now. And that's not only one person, but many other people in the professional field are wondering, why is it they can eat high cholesterol foods and get a low cholesterol count at the time of the day they eat it? And another time of the day, the cholesterol count will go up. That's the funny part, because not too long ago, I think Enid here had an examination. You want to share your little experience with them?
Well, I'm a nurse, so I wanted to have blood tests so that when people talk to me from the Western medicine viewpoint, that I could show them the lab results. And I was interested in knowing the lab results of solar nutrition, so I've had two complete blood workups. It came around that people gave them to me, you know. I didn't have to go seeking it out. But my blood levels were exactly, my cholesterol was low, real low. And I don't drink any milk products or have any milk products at all. And everything else was right in the middle. Iron, just right exactly in the middle. All my other blood type. My iron, I don't eat much meat either. So that what was interesting, what they pointed out was it was exactly in the middle. You know, like if the range was 1 to 10, I was 5. So.
That's what you're observing in the process. We're not adding more minerals to our body, or we're not taking away minerals from our bodies. We are just lining up the time they're supposed to be there to perform the function. So when you eat the food that is grown within the light cycle, nature has already placed the whole spectrum of elements that will work in there. That's why it works, otherwise it wouldn't work. And all the we can't make the environment is here. The plant is extracting elements out of the soil. Now, if I tell a prune not to extract iron out of the soil, the prune will look at me and laugh. But it'll extract iron out of the soil, and it'll stay on the tree and do it. But what is it extracting under the name of prune? Iron. And then I go to the sugar cane. That's a stalk. It's going to extract iron out of the ground too. And if I said don't extract iron, he'd look at me and say, you're crazy, this is my job. I'm extracting iron. But the prune is extracting iron. I don't care if the prune is extracting iron. I'm a sugar cane, I'm extracting iron. This is my job. All right. Yet the element is still the same, iron. Then I go to the beets. And he says, well, I live under the ground. My job is to extract iron. I'm no sugar cane and I'm no prune. I live here. I'm extracting iron. Well, tell me now, three different growth patterns all doing the same job, taking out iron. Then is it the iron that is bad? Or is it the iron should get blamed for not keeping me healthy? Or is it the time or the process or how the iron is extracted that I may not be obeying, that may take a priority, like my lungs will take priority over my liver. I may got a good healthy liver, but if I don't breathe, ain't no good to me either, see? So somewhere the iron is essential as an element for how the iron is processed as an edible means will have to take priority. And how I put it back into my body would have to take priority in the movement for my body to stay functional. This is the thing that is yet to be totally accepted by the researchers, because they're still looking for the element action and not the light process action. And an element can't be an element if it doesn't come from a light process, because all your elements are essentially light atomic energy. But until we look at it, we don't have enough equipment yet to validate that. And when we do have enough, then we'll say, sure, in their minds, there's no more doubt now. The iron in a tree operates different than the iron in a stalk or an iron in a root, because the particular light process allows the absorption to be different. Therefore, it will have a different reaction in the mechanism.
Well, that's basically the argument that's been going on as long as they've been doing the synthetic versus the organic minerals and vitamins. They're saying, well, we look under the microscope, it's the same thing.
Yeah. But they look alike under the microscope, but their electrical field is different. A synthetic element goes anti-clockwise. A natural element moves clockwise in their electrical field. That how come the little thing called a pendulum works, otherwise it wouldn't work. See, last night this gentleman brought me an object to check out called a pendulum. For his particular vibration, it would work. When I hold it in my hand, it didn't do a doggone thing for me. But when I change the vibration to suit my mechanism, it worked. But when I put it back on his hand, it wouldn't work for him. So that's how we know each human being is unique and have their own polarity and their own electrical field.
How did you change it so it was functioning for you?
That's a technique we have.
But I will learn.
No, it's a very simple technique. You want to demonstrate it? You're dealing with polarity. Okay, let's continue. From 3 a.m. to 9 a.m., this particular zone is called the spring of the body. The human body is a miniature universe. therefore your environment which you live on is it. That has a natural law that it follows. So at every 90 days, the temperature changes to represent the season. And there are certain conditions that occur on your body within the exposure of the 90 days of the season. From 3 a.m. to 9 a.m., in one 24-hour movement of a circular action, your body, in a micro way, experiences the same identical reactions that occur in the 90 days when the Earth moved within the Sun. So you have an exact form of xeroxing, but in a micro field. So you can experience everything that took place in spring on the planet every day in a very minute way from 3 a.m. to 9 a.m. in your body. So now the question is this. Your body and its functions came together before they cut the cord from your mother, right? And all the parts were stored up in the sperm and in the ovum, right? But all it did was dilate, you call it grow. So what is happening to our bodies?
Mm-hmm. You agree with that, nurse?
Depends on when, right? I mean, how many revolutions?
Well, this is the degree of dilation to the degree of revolution,
right.
Because you're going to constrict back.
Right.
So we constrict and dilate in reference to revolutions around the sun. But then we reach a point where we don't constrict any further, or we don't dilate any further, and we reach what is called the maximal size of the mechanism. So you have a certain height and a certain width where you stay functional. Then you can be the extremes if you want, but you can't be the extreme in the height. When you reach your height, you reach your height. But you can be maximal in the extremes in the width. So there is where your problem comes in now. What are you doing to yourself with your mouth? But once you reach your height, you reach your height. So that's a dilation principle. And we can't say it's a growth. Because it'll constrict back and dilate progressively. So the labeling is not accurate to say we grow up to a certain size and we stop. It is that the frequency of dilation is set for that particular genetic makeup and will stay within that dilation as many revolutions around the sun.
Well, parts of the body still do dilate after,
right?
Like the nose,
the
part of the
right, exactly,
voice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So this is called the spring of the body, and the middle line, which is from 6 o'clock, is the halfway mark. This line here is a double hour. From 3 a.m. to 9 a.m. represents 24 hours in the human body. But it's 24 hours you're going to experience this particular phenomenon in a very minute way. So this is known as a double hour. Prior to this, we have 11 lines, and they represent 11 hours ascending. And 11 hours descending. And the double hour or double line is in the center, directly halfway between the 6 hours. So this is the ascending side, and this is the descending side of the biological clock in your body. These lines are referred to as lines of photosynthesis, or photon synthesis. And it operates in the red range, so the lines are red. Spectrum. The red spectrum.
Don, would that mean that red light would be healing that during those hours of the day?
Yes, but it goes more than that. You got a shock. 9 o'clock. What time is it?
22 after 12.
22 after 12. What color would you be in now?
You asking me?
Yeah.
You're in the orange range.
You'll be in the orange range. So if you walk over to a therapist and complain, I have a tummy ache in my right side or my left knee or some kind of ache, and the therapist is able to discern by asking what color comes to your mind when you think of the belly ache or the pain in your knee, and you said orange, and he asked you, what time of the day did your bellyache show up? And you say, around 12 o'clock. Then he's able to identify your trauma faster, and he can correct it.
Actually, this is crossover time.
Yes, it's crossover time. Then, between 9 p.m. to 3 p.m., we have the summer of the body. And midday is a center line again, or double line. This represents 2 hours, and it has an ascending and a descending function. So the ascending function has 11 lines representing 11 hours. And it has 11 lines descending again. And it's in the red range, and it's referred to as photon synthesis. That's the actual interaction of light going on your body within the day, but it synchronizes with the effects of it when you're exposed to the actual season of 90 days. So we're in what? End of winter or middle of winter?
Middle
of winter, right. So how that light is affecting this location for 90 days when you live in it, that's what it will be doing. But in 24 hours, when we come to the winter of the body, in a small micro action, it is working on your body in the same way. So the organs do have different time frequencies and different reactions that they're operating. So if you get a disease or a headache or a problem in the body, it'll fall into one of the four categories of temperature, which is a time ratio to season. So certain time of the year the pain comes back, other time of the year it doesn't seem to bother you, certain time of the day it comes back, other time of the day it doesn't bother you. Yeah.
Okay, so I want to put the two thoughts so that they work together, and the thoughts of dilation and constriction and photon synthesis. So it's the
the reaction that the body has to the photons that either constricts or dilates
right.
each atom within the body.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
I wanted it to stay in English in
right.
my mind.
So when it dilates, it moves forward.
Okay.
When
it
constricts, it's stationary.
So
if I dilate, yeah. See, that's moving out. If I constrict,
I guess my mind has, up to this point, thought that photosynthesis meant the production of something, so it means it wasn't there before and now it is there. And so now I want it to say that photon synthesis is actually the stimulation by the photons to dilate or constrict as they're required.
That's exactly what it's actually doing. Because you ever been down to a cave?
Have I ever been where?
To a cave.
To a cave, yes.
And see the water in the cave, and then you walk through.
Yes.
You ever see where they put a little light for you to guide your way through the cave?
Yes.
And you ever walk over the light and look behind the light and see a little green moss only there?
Yes.
But you don't, then you take a flashlight and look along the water where you don't see no green moss, but you come back to that spot where the light is, there's a green moss forming there.
Yes.
Photon
synthesis
is occurring. Yeah. In the location to set up nitrogen action on the elements there to form algae, your very first form of protein. So you have your photon synthesis action there right away. And your body is doing that 24 hours a day in its very subtle way. You are making it and you're clogging it up or you're transporting it on time. There's no way to get around it. You're a miniature model of it, but it's still able to identify it and recognize how to work with it instead of being restricted by it and be a victim of it. So nature set it up already. We're just identifying it and what organs take priority at what time of day they do it.
And Adana, why do we still need plants and animals as an intermediary?
No.
Why do we still need to ingest plants and animals as an intermediary when that process is going on all the time?
Man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God.
He's not speaking correctly.
Man is not male nor female. The word didn't imply that. We took that to mean it. Come, let us make man in our own image and likeness, male and female. That was an old agricultural way of saying, come, let us make a manifestation. And it's not a me or a singular function. Us is a plural function. But what is the us? Is it a man or woman sitting in the sky talking? Making a manifestation and a male and a female representation in our own image and likeness. We assume all kind of connotations of the words that were said in an agricultural terminology, when placed in a proper technical language, we have a vast science that is totally ignored and why we are victims of our own note. Come, let us, that's optics and sonics, they don't have personality. And all we can find in this universe is optics and sonics. Make a manifestation you call mass or element is a result of optics and sonics. And it has to have optics and sonics as a representation of its origin. And in the momentum, it will take a polarity called male or female. That's a plus charge or a minus charge. Doesn't say it's good nor bad. The plus charge means it propels out, and the minus charge means it pulls back in. And therefore, we're going to be a print-off. So here's a cellular object, a print-off of these physical laws set up by nature, we're called cosmology or metaphysics. There is no metaphysics, but there's physics and the different rates of physics. Meta was an ancient word used by agricultural people to represent beyond. There's no beyond. There's only visible and invisible physics called cosmology. We are a result of the invisible physics operating in the invisible range slowing down to be visible in a manifested visible range. But we who? Sonic optics now catalyzing in the form of a tissue. So my whole mechanism is a print-off of my ecological makeup. So we are here to entertain ourselves with our eyes and five senses. When you get back into the process, Shirley MacLaine said, well, hey, fellas, would you join me in the wind? And some other person will call you all kind of thing, but in the end, all of them are right, nobody's wrong. There's no good nor bad. It's how we get back through the electrical fields to see ourselves. That's where we're going back. Solar nutrition is just a simple way to eat your way there. Solar nutrition is just a simple way to eat your way there. Eat your way to butterflyhood.
That's great.
Or the conscious self immortality. That's what you're doing.
But at what point would we be able to just take the dilation stimulating qualities of photons directly into our mechanism for the sustenance, for the nutrition?
My friend, the man Jesus lived and said, we don't live by eating the elements in the form of food or bread. That's a label for elements that enter the mechanism in an indirect way.
Mm-hmm.
That's, we don't live by that. Number two, we don't eat food, we process food. Thus, we break down the structure into its elements and process their movement through our mechanism in order to be on time. But we can't function if we don't breathe. So which is important, to eat the food through my mouth or to breathe before I eat?
Breath.
Now, the fetus is hooked to the mother of the umbilical cord. There's a tape we would like people to see. It's called The Miracle of Life, where you see that no matter how that baby is in the womb, it cannot breathe through its nose. And all the fluids are flushing through the mouth and through the umbilical cord to keep it floating so that it constricts and dilates and is called a living organism. It's not a human being. When they cut the cord, all the liquids are shut off. It's forced to dilate the valves of the nostrils to breathe now pure air. If the air stays on time with the dilation and the constriction, we keep that organism. If it don't, we have to hook it up to a machine to see if it will synchronize to the machine's regulation. And if it doesn't, then we will say to the parent, the fetus didn't live. Can I say the child? It's not a child yet. The fetus didn't respond. It refused to absorb the air process. So that's the end of the process. Start over again. It's very factual, but sometimes very heartrending because we're trapped into the personality image of it. It's when we look at it and see it from the laws of how they're set up, we understand what we are, not who we are. Now, by the same token, you can regulate that air without activating the mouth anymore. So, the man who don't eat and lives to his full 100 years when he quit at 40, and live 60 revolutions around the sun without eating, what is he processing?
The elements right out of the air.
By what technique now?
Photosynthesis.
Yeah. He's a breatharian, he's not an etherian.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so therefore, as a breatharian, he is actualizing solar principles into his mechanism by the constriction, regulation, and dilation of his organism in rhythm to the oxygen in his own body.
He'd have to be breathing on time then. So if he's out of sync,
then that's where he's not going to get the benefits.
Good, then he's going back to exactly what he is, that this manifestation is directly a link up of atoms or elements that are made up of sound and light and are constantly constricting and dilating to function. So you read the case histories of people who live without eating as a simple representation of this principle. And how they got to that state, they had three choices. They didn't do it the natural way, they did it by one of the two extremes, to abstain or to be injured. So injury can cause you to live without eating. To abstain is to deny you want to put food in and to rise above the limitation of eating to breathe only. So they call it the two extremes. But the natural process is set up already within the DNAs and RNAs. So nature has that already set up for you, a 3-score 10. Man thought 3-score 10 was to die, that the human mechanism was set to die 3-score 10. It's not set to die 3-score 10. It's set to phase out the utilization of solids and liquids through the oral process and resort to the nasal process. But you got 144 years to go.
Okay. How many?
144 years to go for every element you are. So you are an adult. And then you've got all eternity from here to midnight, eternity to go with all 144 elements without worrying. Because why? The creative principle can go out of business. And you understand that, how he's going to throw you out in the garden.
So at that point we'd have total access and not be localized because we have gone through the whole process.
That's exactly what this thing is all about. It's conscious immortality within the respiratory function of a universal law called sonics optics. So they write it in their old language, in, they use the word in. In doesn't have boundary lines. The beginning, or in the begging, you got to beg yourself out of it, was the word or the sonics. And the word was with God, that means the word, the sonics was with conscious functioning or nowness. Didn't go in any place. And the word was God, that's conscious functioning. And the word was made flesh, tissue, that means sonics slowed down and became tissue, the last expression or the slowest expression of sonics, and dwells in the manifestation. You hear what's dwelling in this tissue? All this sound alike, ain't no difference. You can't talk any further than that. But if you bust it open, it'll ignite it to a light. So what have we got? Sonics and optics. But this is a crystallization of the lowest speed in order for it to talk back to itself. It cannot talk back to itself in this form. So it just give it off. In this form, that can be made to talk. A, B, C. So A sounds nicer than this. But this is good in Morse code. Or it's good in dancing. So organized noise is music, but organized noise is language. And now we keep on the babbling going all the time in the Tower of Babel. Well, big mouth, you know, babbling all the time. But this is how we are set up. It's when we understand it, then we have the joy of living it. So here we have the photon synthesis lines, and they're red from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. and they operate in two color zones. From 9 to 12 is orange, and from 12 to 3 is yellow. See? Mm-hmm.
What does that mean, though?
I mean, we'll cover that. In the meantime, you have to record it right now.
Okay.
What it is. And this is a summary function of the body. We just said before, when somebody asked me why the red, I made a sort of a noise, and there's how we track down the trauma and what time of the day, because color is how we organize our function. I'm going to drive a car. You drive a car?
Yes.
It's nice to go on a red light and stop at the green and go like mad to yellow, right?
Well.
Yeah.
You just follow the rules.
Well, I just said the rules. You go on the red light, stop at the green, and go like mad at yellow.
Well, those are different rules. Go by.
Those must be Houston rules. We have to stop on the red and go
you,
on
you
the
just
green.
You just introduced the red.
You sure you're not colorblind?
Oh.
Oh. You see, now what kind of rules is that? You see how you got trapped right away? You say a rule. I'm asking if you're colorblind now. You see, if you make a rule, it's not so the rule has to do with the color. Is the capability of the individual to identify what the color really means.
Oh.
So this is what we're saying. Why colors are set up to have a common relationship versus colors that may have a different relationship. A person who is colorblind doesn't see red as red, he sees red as green.
Right.
See, and therefore you can't say they're not capable of driving. It's just that they relate to green as red. See? And so we have to have that as a means to measure the individual if they're colorblind or not. Now, so they have special lens for them and they have special training for them. Because what, they want everybody to look alike.
Yeah.
So be sure it's green, there you go, you know, don't go the wrong color.
Is that caused by a trauma, Adana, or is that?
Yes, there's a trauma and there's a possible injury too. All right. From 3 p.m. to 9 p.m., we have the same principle, but this is called the autumn of the body, or fall. And the lines of photosynthesis are there. And what happens now is a strange phenomenon. The ascending lines from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. are in the orange range, and so they're 11, representing hours. So that tells you from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m., the ascending function of the autumn range in your body in 24 hours is subjected to another light spectrum, and that's in the orange. From 6 p.m. to 9 p.m., the next range of light, and there are 12 hours, it's in the yellow spectrum. But it's still referred to as photon synthesis. But it breaks up into two colors of the spectrum. The first portion of it is orange and the second portion is yellow, and that begins the autumn because of the temperature range of your body, and it's in the same principle in the climate around the planet. So going down the road in the middle of November, December, the trees are very green, turning up to be beautiful. Brand new. No?
Not this planet.
No, you sure now? What is it turning? Yellow, brown? Yeah, and all the colors, all the leaves are falling off, yeah? See, because that's how the temperature is causing it to change now. But that's the same thing that happens to you in the happy hour time.
Yeah.
You want to go do what? Crawl in a corner and be happy, right? See, that's autumn of the body. Oh, you see, it feels familiar? Right, and that's where you're kidding yourself in the kidney time. See, all these are set up to match the temperature and they're set up to match the light range. We didn't make it, we had to recognize it. And that was so comical after a while. We think we're making this environment when the environment is already looking at us and imposing its influence on us.
All right, from 9 p.m. to 3 a.m., we have the winter of the body. And the same phenomena of photosynthesis occurs, and you have an ascending function and a descending function. So there's 11 hours of ascending, and they repeat itself in the orange range. And 11 hours in the descending function, and it repeats itself again in the yellow range. So autumn and winter are similar. Spring and summer are similar. In 24 hours you live through these same laws that the planet is doing in 360-degree turn in every 90 days. You live out these same functions in a microwave. So in essence, there is no such thing as sickness. There is only incorrect timing. All functions are set to go. But if the timing is off, you'll have what? Too fast or too slow. So that's how come they call that the yin-yang of the early writers. Today we know it means constriction, dilation. All life operates on time in a constricting, dilating principle. So, not too long ago, again, these lines are referred to as photon synthesis. Not too long ago, somebody who you all know, she's studying to be a doctor, and she was taking her class in chemistry, and the doctor who was giving the class was making the comment. He said, "All my years as a surgeon and research scientist, and glad to teach you students, my answer to what life is very simple, and I hope you can record it." And so they said, "What is it, Doc?" And this is what he said: "Life is elements of the right weight and right pH factor moving on time all the time." He hasn't found in all his years as a doctor where it has contrasted with that. He said, "What is how to make it stay on time?" He said, "That's what our problem is." So she was amazed. And you know the person's name is Vicky Fabre. She used to live in Flag. Then she went to acupuncture school in Santa Fe where Ginger lived, and now she has her clinic and going to school again, continuing her education in Texas. But she was saying, Adano, after hearing that statement by her top professor, it sounded kind of strange. I heard this years ago at a solid nutrition class. I say, yeah, they're all catching up with the principles, but we're not here to condemn, we're here to get out of the ball of enjoying it. So this is the winter, this is the spring, this is the summer, and this is the autumn. Now, we have the green and the blue spectrum from 3 p.m. to 9 p.m. And from 9 p.m. to 3 a.m., we have the indigo and the violet. And 3 a.m. to 9 a.m. in the morning, we have one portion of the body that doesn't have a color, it's white. So from 3 a.m. to 6 a.m., these organs are in the white light. And from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m., only this organ is in the red light. Let's go have some lunch, then we'll come back and put in the elements. So that's getting you set up now.
page wide.
Being is a biological sex being.
Okay.
The male is a sperm and an ovum.
Mm-hmm.
The female is a what?
Sperm and an ovum.
So what's the difference between the male and the female now?
Nothing.
So they only take two different frequencies to appear as human beings.
Right.
One took the frequency of the female, the other took the frequency of the male.
Right.
But they're both composed of what?
Both. Sperm and ovum.
So what sexology is there to be afraid of now?
There isn't any.
Now what sexology is there to overindulge now?
I don't know.
Why bother?
Yeah, why bother? That's the other thing.
The point is this. Don't confuse the act of sex with procreation.
Oh,
and don't confuse it with the act of sex as abuse. Don't confuse the act of sex by abstinence as a means to be God realized. The act of sex wouldn't give you a chance to be a human being if it was taken away. Where would you be if the act of sex wasn't possible?
We wouldn't be here.
You wouldn't have been here. But there is a difference between being born prematurely by the wrong preparation and being born in the right time frame with the right action. So if your daddy is a smart man and he's 100 years old and mom is a nice gal or 60 and turn on and she make daddy get a little girl like you come out genie ass, you got the world running by the tailbone. But if you come out a 16-year-old kid with a 20-year-old boy and you got a dumb cough to raise and not a woodhead, what you got? Misery. So is that the act of sex you're going to blame?
Ignorance.
Or the lack of understanding of your, what you are.
Lack of understanding.
But the act was already given for man as a form to go forth, multiply, and have dominion years ago, own it.
So if you're not going to multiply, then you should you
Well,
still...
multiplication don't necessarily mean that you're going to go and make a bunch of kids all the time.
Right.
Multiplication simply means that whenever the need arises for an offspring, fine. But what kind of offspring you want to make? I got to tell you a little story. There's a great guru who comes to this country. One day he's sitting on right here in this California belt, out in the California, and a girl and her husband walks up to him and says, Master, we would like to have a child. We've been married for years and we've been trying to be very good, but it doesn't seem to be practical. You'd like to have a child. And he looks all around, trying to ignore the question. And then they kept persisting. And he looked straight at them and said, I don't think you have that karma anymore. It's over. They didn't understand what he said. So they kept persisting. He says, I don't think you have that karma anymore. It's over. And they kept persisting. Then everybody about that time was say, come on, Master, tell us what. Then he looks at the young couple and he smiled. He said, I'll tell you what I'll do for you. I'll evolve a tree to the level of the human that you can take care of. He'd be a wonderful baby. He'll obey you. You're nothing but a woodhead. No problem in raising that kid, if you want it. But I don't see you have any karma. Meaning, there is no soul out there to which those two bodies have any opportunity to offer for a being to come into work out karma with them. Their karma with creative reproduction had been over many lives ago. They came back to live in a lifestyle to appreciate each other as human, husband and wife and as man and woman. But they didn't come back here to be mother and father. And he was trying to tell them that there's nothing wrong with the act of sex. But what was wrong in their head is to feel that they got to be responsible for something they ain't real.
For a creation, like a child.
So he's telling them, well, if you really want it, okay, I'll let you get pregnant. But this one is going to be a tree, because he has to bring a tree in. He can't find no soul waiting out there to come in there and say, okay, hey man, I will get you this woman pregnant. And now it's your turn to come in and work with him. There was nothing there.
You'll
evolve the tree, because how does cells evolve? The resin falls off the tree, moves down into the water, goes to the ocean, bonds with the sodium chloride, and forms a tissue. And you have amoeba, and amoeba becomes a marine life. The marine life crawls out and become a reptile. The reptile crawls out and be a gorilla. And the gorilla walks all four, and then you have a human life form. And so that's what we call humanoid. Now, however you beat the gorilla up there, you're in the jungle, chasing away from taking away your cherries or your bananas, you may get karma with after down the road. If you allow it to eat your banana and then chase him away, he may not come back to bug you. See? Wow. So this is how you've got to look at how many times we resented the animal forms or rejected, accepted them. That's the karma. Wow. But he's telling her in simple language, and the husband, it's over. They've done it already in this. What they need is to be with themselves.
So, Donna, what is the timing for the reproductive organs on the time clock? Is there time for them?
What?
The timing of the reproductive organs.
Yeah, we come into that.
Oh,
time.
Okay.
First, we got to get some things. So, are we ready? Now. The human body is like a transformer. And this is the symbol of the transformer. And it has a primary coil and a secondary coil and a magnetic field. As a core. Today we are only dealing with the primary function of the human body. Not the secondary function.
Please say that again.
We are dealing with the primary function of the body and not the secondary function of the body. The primary function is referred to as basic minerals. The secondary function is referred to as trace minerals. As I say, we're not dealing with the secondary function today. We're dealing with the primary function. There's enough information to keep you going in the primary function. The human body has basic minerals that control the primary functions. It's composed of 12 basic minerals That's your chemical body in the basic function. It's composed of 12 basic minerals and there's a simple way to remember them. There are three S's. Three C's two M&M.
What is M&M?
M&M, the candy.
Two M's.
It's just a joke. But two M's.
Okay. Two PP. And one if, IF. So SSSCCC, MMPPIF. And I'll tell you what they really mean. So you can't go wrong, it's 3-2-2-1. The first S is silicon. And you're very silly.
And the next S is sodium. Put you in the sod. If you're silly.
Sod?
Yeah, sod, the ground, you know. Sodium. I'll throw you back in the dirt. And the third C is sulfur. Very important chemical. And the first C is calcium. The second C is carbon. And the third C is chlorine. The first M is man, Guinness, big man. And the second M is mag, Guinness. Or magnesium, big mag.
Or magnesium.
Yeah, you have manganese and magnesium. Man is pretty big. If man can manage what he is, he'd be all right. He needs a magazine to do it. So that's why he's got problems. He can't manage what he's got, therefore he has to rely on the magazine. Manganese and magnesium. Sounds funny, but when you come to your chemistry, your body, you'll see how comical it is. And the first P is potassium. You go to potty. And the second P is phosphorus. And the big I is iron. That's the irony of it. That's why the Iranians are wondering what the hell is happening. The Iraqians are harassing them so much, and the Israelis are irritating them. That big I, you know, the three big major powers today that are creating all the misery. The big eye is the one with the big eyes. And the last one is F, fluorine, the one that doesn't float.